Hola. Ay, Dios mío, it's Thursday. Time for Jackie's Vida Loca, where every week we divulge our Latino secrets, talk about our crazy Latino culture, gossip about our crazy Latino friends and relatives, and interview the craziest, the funniest Latino comedians on the Latino comedy scene. Welcome to my crazy life. Jackie's Vida Loca.
Hello, my loquitos. How are you? This is Jackie, and I'm coming live from Los Angeles. And let me tell you, it has been a crazy loca week. The last 2 weeks for me have been insane, absolutely insane. Well, first of all, the great thing about this show is that I can take you with me wherever I go. So today I'm not in studio. Let me tell you, I'm literally parked in the parking lot of Manalo Lithgow Mortuary. I was tearing down the 405 because I had a huge pitch today, which, by the way, went very well. But I had a huge pitch today. I was hauling ass back from that pitch thinking, well, maybe I'll make it to the studio, but I didn't. So I had to pull over at this mortuary. Next door is a Korean Methodist church. I don't know which is worse. But anyway, I'm sitting here. I hope they don't mistake me as like a dead person. There's no possible way they could like take me away. But I'm just hoping that nobody finds me and that I can continue talking to you here. We have an amazing show today. It's all about Latino comedy. So, you know, we're going to be interviewing a comedic actor, a really good friend of mine, Daniel Mora. Then Joe Falzarano is going to join us. He is a comedy producer, manager, creator, instructor. Let me tell you, he is the you-know-what when it comes to behind-the-scenes getting people who want to be in comedy famous. And I was lucky enough to be one of his students, a private student, everybody. And I know what you're thinking. It wasn't like that. He's a straight-up guy. He has a family. He's very cute and very nice. But he is really, really influential in this world. And then last but not least, you're going to meet Ludovica. If you don't know her work already, she's been around for a very long time, and she is one of the funniest ladies I have ever met in my life. And I think she lends like a very good lens on this field because being a stand-up comic is not easy. In fact, there's a really great quote that I found this week on Suvez.com. And it goes like this: doing stand-up comedy is a hard and thankless job. You travel from city to city, staying in dingy motels where somebody probably got murdered. Then you go to some crappy club and try to make 15 drunken yahoos laugh. If you're lucky, you make it big and break into movies. And if you don't make it, you leave behind a string of divorces and stints in rehab. It's no wonder stand-ups are such miserable bastards. Good comedy comes from pain, and Latino comedians bring their own brand of misery to the stage. I just found that really funny. I don't know how much of it truly applies to me because I'm actually a happy comic, and I sort of source my inspiration from my family. Look, I grew up in a household where I had a hot tamale, little Puerto Rican mom, and I had the other side of my family. My father was Russian Jewish, so the other side of my family were typically New York Jews. And that, living in that environment, was enough to give me plenty of material till the day I die. And, you know, when the day I die comes, I should come back to this mortuary to thank them for allowing me to do this show here. Anyway, that's not what I was talking about. But, yeah, comedy for me is a total release. It's a happy business. I know that there are some dark aspects to the business, and no thing in show business is easy. And, you know, I can attest to the first time that I ever got on a stage and told jokes. It was a huge surprise for me because it went really, really well. And people laughed, and they liked the jokes and everything. But not every single time you go up there, it's that way. And unfortunately, every comedian has times where you literally bomb, and you just want to die. And you want the hook to come and take you away. So, you know, it's not an easy business, but it's something I really love to do. I was in the HBO Comedy Festival. I did a comedy special on Showtime. I was in the Hot Tamales Live, which was a really cool show. You met Kiki Melendez during our first show. The Hot Tamales was exactly what it sounds like, a bunch of hot Latinas getting up on stage and doing comedy, stand-up comedy. I was one of the sketch artists, but I was very heavily influenced by what I saw and what I was learning, and from that, I decided to do stand-up. So I've done stand-up at the Comedy Store, the Improv, the Laugh Factory, all the most, you know, prestigious venues, but not easy venues because you have to be good and your stuff has to be on top of it every single time. The other thing I'm doing right now, which I absolutely love, is the Groundlings. And for those of you who don't know who the Groundlings are, it's the premier improv comedy troupe. So very hard to get into. You have to audition to get in. I was lucky, and I was able to get in, and now I'm working with them to learn exactly how the best way to do improv is. And, you know, I dreamt about doing this stuff all my life. And sometimes you lose your course or you lose your way. But, you know, today what we're going to hear is from the experts who are in that business working along with me, who, you know, have their ups and downs and need to find inspiration for comedy from every facet of their life. You know, my comedy favorites, boy, there are so many people to look up to for me. But I got to tell you, and I'm kind of a little bit old school when it comes to this, but for me, the two comedy geniuses, Jackie's two comedy geniuses, number one, Carol Burnett. That woman was ingenious, had an incredible, impeccable comedic timing. And I don't think people realize this, but people who are in comedy, until you get to the Carol Burnett show stage, you have to write your own material. And I'm sure that she had a hand in writing all that amazing material for her show. She, to this day, is just an amazing actor, an amazing woman. But to me, she's the queen of comedy. And then the other Carol that I idolized was the guy who played Archie Bunker, Carol O'Connor. What an incredible actor. You know, my dream job would actually be to create a sitcom, and have a role in a sitcom that was as good as All in the Family. And for you, you know, old people like me out there, I'm not so old, but anyway, for you old people like me, you'll remember this show. And for you younger little shit, whoops, not allowed to say that, but you younger little ones, you need to check this out online and YouTube it and check out All in the Family, because Carol O'Connor was a legend. But my other, like, more modern comedy favorites, I love Chris Rock. He rocks it every time, and I'm not, no pun intended, but he just does an amazing, amazing job every single time. And from what I heard from people on the inside, like on his team, he literally labors over every single little word. And you might watch an hour or two of this man on stage, but for him, the comedy writing process is meticulous. It's almost scientific. You know, I've learned through this process that the best way to write a joke is to write as few words as possible. So when you're in a dinner party or whatever and trying to be funny and tell people a joke, cut out as many words as possible. The more words, the more people want to kill you, okay? And you have to get to the punchline. The more you belabor the punchline, the worse your joke is. So fewer words. We call it in the business more laughs per minute, and it's true. The more laughs, if you're dreaming of being a stand-up and want to write a set, try to write 3 minutes of really great jokes and put as many punchlines as you can in there. Don't, you know, the stories are for the movies. The stories are for television. Cut your story down and keep it as short as possible, and you will be funnier. And if you want to get on a plane and come out to L.A., or if you're already here, you know what you got to do if you want to be a stand-up comic is get out there and perform as many nights a week. And sometimes it ain't fun, because sometimes it's a Monday or Tuesday night, not a lot of people out. You literally have three people in the audience, like I was just saying, and you got to make those people laugh to a full house or to three people. So it's not always easy. But when you get that laugh, people, when you actually get people, when you're on stage doing a comedy set and you get people to laugh, it is the biggest, most intoxicating thing you can imagine. So anyway, I've said a lot to say this. We have an amazing show for you today. We're going to pause for a commercial break, and then we're going to come back with Danny Mora, my good friend. Talk to you in just a few.
Listen to Easy Way Broadcasting shows powered by WTVNetworks.com every day of the week on Blog Talk Radio with celebrity hosts Eric Zulli, Shane Sparks, Sarah Winchester, Rick Rosman, and Mo Egger. Easy Way Broadcasting is the hottest place for music, sports, celebrity gossip, advice, and insider tips. Follow at Easy Way Broadcast. Call Easy Way Broadcasting Shows with your questions and comments at 914-338-1303. Join the 500,000 Twitter followers who have discovered Eric Zulli's newest project, Easy Way Broadcasting, powered by WTVNetworks.com on Blog Talk Radio. Find the most up-to-date info on his show, Easy Talk, which airs every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, by following his Twitter site at Easy Way Broadcast and at Eric Zulli. EZ connects listeners with their favorite celebrities and Hollywood insiders who are doing it the easy way. And you can, too. Talk to Eric during the show at 914-338-1303.
Okay, everybody, I promised you that my good friend Danny Moore would be joining us today. We actually had to pre-record this session because guess what? He's working tomorrow, Thursday. Today is Wednesday, so we're doing it a day in advance just so we could get him on the line because he's so damn busy. So he's a working actor in Hollywood. Let me tell you something. That is the best kind of actor to be. He's been in the business for over 20 years and has appeared in dozens of films, such as Gringo Loco, El Tux, and Snap, which is now in post-production. He recently just finished principal photography on the long-awaited film The Last Brown Beret. He's going to tell us about that, and he loops hundreds of other projects. I don't know if you know what that is, but he'll tell you about that too. He has been starring on TV for many, many years on hit shows such as Two Broke Girls, America's Most Wanted, NCIS LA, Weeds, although I don't know whether he was stoned, Boston Legal, Joan of Arcadia, Scrubs, The Shield. Boy, the list goes on and on and on. You can check him out on IMDb. And you've probably heard his actual voice on numerous voiceover commercials, English and Spanish. He's not a stranger to the live theater either, and I know that's a real love of his. And he's worked at such legendary venues as the Old Globe and the San Diego Rep. What you probably don't know about him is that he's fluent in German. German, Spanish, and Italian. He loves to dance salsa. One of these days I'm going to get him to dance with me. And today he is our guest on Jackie's Vida Loca. Hola, Danny Mora. How are you?
What is up, girlfriend?
As if you didn't know.
I'm doing very well, thankfully. Very busy, very busy. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You are. You have so many projects going on. Let me tell you, when I Googled you, I thought I knew all your work, but let me tell you, buddy, I was so impressed at your work and your body of work. It's amazing. What are you working on tomorrow? You're on the Paramount set, right?
Yeah, on the Paramount set. I don't know if I can talk about it yet because sometimes they make us sign confidentiality agreements, but it's a TV show, and from what I understand, it's really good. So
wow.
I'm doing that. I've done Bones, Prison Break, Numbers, a bunch of movies. Looping is a nice gig to have. It fills in the holes right nicely.
But what is looping? Because I don't think people like outside of L.A. know what that is.
Looping in the old days is literally how they did it. They would take a loop of film and, you know, play it over and over again. You would record the sound. It's all the background, foreground. When you're in a hospital, you'll hear the public address, you know, Dr. So-and-so, pickup line, whatever, cops. All the crosstalk, people just having a conversation, you know?
It's such a cool thing. I think most people don't realize, but all the sound that they see in movies, all that sound, conversation, everything, is always done after the fact. And a lot of actors don't really like that they have to go back and loop in the sound piece of it because they want to get the sound perfect. Most people just think that they're just talking at that moment, there's a mic over their head, and you're done. But all that sound happens after the fact. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, plus, you know, even the most seasoned and professional actors, on a certain take, they just, you know, did it differently for whatever reason, or they mumbled this word because that's how the character is or whatever. And sometimes you can't even understand yourself or why or how did I do it. And, you know, that's just how it is, which is why we don't like to do our own stuff.
Have you ever been on set and had a director say, okay, I need you to do that exactly the same way again, and you're sitting there going, how the hell did I do it? It's like, I don't remember how I just did it.
Well, I have that problem with auditions. You go in there and read, and whatever, you know, your muse was at that moment is how you did it. And a week or two later when they say, okay, did it exact? Well, I don't know. Can I hear a recording or something?
I know. It's so funny. I did my voiceover demo, and there was this Clearasil spot that I had, and the Clearasil spot sounds like I'm literally 14 years old, and I don't even know where that voice comes from. But I guess when you get into the character, I don't know, something gets born inside of you, and it just comes out a certain way, and it's not something you, like, coherently control, right?
Yeah. Well, plus the fact that what you think you sound like isn't what you actually sound like, and when you hear it, you try to imitate that. So it's going to be an affectation of what you actually did, which is not what you did.
Exactly. We're talking a lot of shop, which I'm sure people like hearing about because, you know, I think before I came to Hollywood, you don't really get that sort of insider perspective. But I do want to sort of address this. You know, you've been doing this for over 20 years, you said, and you just told me a little while ago before we got on how old you were, which freaked me out because you certainly don't look that age. And you can be the culprit and tell everybody how old you are. But you look like, you know, really young to me.
I'm 52.
Oh, my God. I just think that's unbelievable. It's really hard to believe. And you guys got to look Daniel Eduardo Mora on IMDb on the Internet. You got to check him out. He's very handsome, and he's a great guy.
English, Daniel Edward.
Oh, ahora te pones un gringo. What? Are you now a gringo?
I've always been a gringo. I was born a gringo. It's the beauty of who we are. We don't have to be one thing or another. We can be both.
Can I just tell you something? We Latinos born in this country need to fess up to one fact. One fact. We are gringos, okay? We're gringos. We're here.
And I'm proud of it. I'm so
proud
of it. I joined the military. Not only did I join the military, I was part of the 82nd Airborne, an elite unit. I wanted to be the first to fight. And
so you were in the Navy?
I'm in the Coast Guard Auxiliary, so I'm still very much a gringo.
Okay, so here we go. First of all, I had no idea that you had done that in your life, and I totally have an awe and respect for the military. I have a lot of military members in my family, and I'm so proud of you for doing that. So, of course, you're a gringo, and you will never find anybody more patriotic than me. So that's awesome. So how does that parlay to your acting work?
I would be a close second, let me tell you, if not first.
How do you parlay that experience into your acting work?
You know, in the looping, I do a lot of movies where there's, you know, these military maneuvers or infantry maneuvers or tactics or what have you, and it all comes in handy. Of course, you know, when I was in the Army, we had Jeeps and M16s and M60s, and now it's Saws and M4s and Hummers or Humvees. You know, it's completely foreign to me now.
Let me tell you, it is some complex operation, the military. I'm not going to get into it on this show, but I did a mini boot camp, and you're looking at Private Benjamin right here, and it was the most intense and emotional experience I ever had in my entire life. I had to rappel down a 5-story building, the whole thing. Danny, can you imagine that? Me?
Did you get the condos?
No, I went up
Remember
a tower.
Private Benjamin?
No, I went up a 5-story tower at Fort Jackson.
I was in Fort Jackson. That's where I was. Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Are you kidding? Okay, listen. We're going to talk about the military stuff. I promise you, we're going to talk about that. But what I really want to know, and I think what our listeners want to know, is how did you become an actor? How hard was that?
You know, it's the last thing I wanted to do. I was in my fourth year of a business degree at San Diego State, a business admin degree. And one day I had to get an arts elective, and I asked a friend of mine, and he said, oh, take acting, bro, you'll love it. And I did, and I fell in love. And then the next year I was up here in Hollywood. I grew up in San Diego. So I just fell in love. And
were your parents supportive of that? I mean, they pay for your school for 4 years, and then you go become an actor? Hello?
Well, no. Actually, I paid for my own school because I had been in the military, so I got the EEAP. But they weren't too happy about it. But
that's what I was
getting. Fight me that much. Grandma was like, ay, mijo, why don't you get a real job? You know, that kind of thing. And yet she spent 5-6 hours in front of the TV every day. You know, the irony in that.
You know, it's funny because I think our parents want the best for us, right? And I think the last thing they want to see us do is struggle in life. They want to know you got a great career and you're going to be successful and you're going to be independent. And when they hear that you want to be an actor, what they hear is, I want to starve to death, I want to serve food for a living and work for nothing, you know, and I think it's very hard for them to make the leap. But how do we get beyond that? I mean, I know how I did it, but how did you get past that?
How did you do it, Jackie?
Well, frankly, honestly, I did both. I did the corporate career in marketing, and there was never a time that I didn't do acting. When I lived in Miami, I was always in acting. I did a bunch of commercials, a couple of films. There weren't a lot of TV shows being shot there at the time except for Miami Vice, which I did. I actually died on Miami Vice. I was a bad, bad lady. It was amazing. I loved it. Pero no, and you know, I think for years and years and years, I kept feeling like I had to have this corporate career to sustain myself, and it wasn't a bad thing. I don't have regrets. And I was able to make great money, turn the lights on, eat dinner every night. But honestly, now I'm focused on it. I'm here where I need to be, and I'm focused on it more than ever, and I see more prospect for myself than I did, you know, 20 years ago. And now my mom's my biggest fan, you know.
There you go. Well, because you've done well. If you were
and because I did the corporate thing.
Money every 6 months or so. Ay, mami, no tengo dinero.
Thank God I never had to go back to my parents with my tail between my legs and, you know, beg for a roof over my head or money or whatever. Thank God I was always self-sufficient. But this interview is not about me anymore, so it's about you. So how did you get beyond, you know, the naysayers?
It's you know, first of all, you've got to be able to take no as you know, it's got to be part of your daily routine, because that's, we're in the no business.
Right.
You know, one out of every 10 or out of 20, you get a gig, but the others are all no's. So you've got to have a thick skin. And
it's like
in
a
order
sales
to have
job,
a thick
really.
Skin, yeah, you're selling yourself every time. You know, I'm the best actor for this role. I'm the best person for acting. You will love me on the set and off the set, so on and so forth. But you got to love it. It just really has to be what you want to do, because you just got to do it. Unlike some people who say, well, you know, I want to be a Hollywood star, whatever. If that's the reason you're doing it, that's tough, because it's a very narrow window.
You know, I agree 100%. I agree 100%, because when I introduced you, I said this is a working actor, and that's the best kind of actor to be. People who have stars in their eyes and think of celebrity probably will never get an acting job, because all they want is to be Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian. But people like you and me who take this very seriously know that this is a little bitty step at a time process.
Yeah. A lot of preparation, a lot of training. And people like that who just want to start, and frankly, sometimes, you know, they become a little too vulnerable, and people know how to tap into that. And, you know, a lot of people get abused in this business.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about having a business degree, and I know we talked about this, too, before getting on the show. But, you know, I really think that there's a foundation when you have a business degree, when you've been in the work world. You have this sort of mentality and thinking of how to manage yourself like a professional. You know, and so many people come out here and want to be actors, but they're always late. They don't do their stuff the way they need to. They don't stay on top of relationships. I mean, tell us a little bit about that and how you manage it as a business for yourself, from a professional standpoint.
Well, it's funny you said be on time, you know, this and that. The first thing that the person who does the casting for the looping gigs said to us, to me anyway, I only asked three things she said. Be on time, do your research, and no attitude. And that was it. And I've done it, and thankfully I'm able to get those gigs. I'm working tomorrow, and they really fill in the holes nicely in between the bigger projects. So, you know, that's it. Be on time, be cool, and, you know, do your work. Do your homework, you know, go over your sides. Memorize your lines backwards and forwards. I've done a lot of theater, and let me tell you, the stories I can tell you, we could do a whole two shows on when people just go up on their lines, they come in on the wrong side of the stage. I mean, you name it. But if you know your stuff, I did one where I played Pancho Villa, and the general, one of my generals, always would try to cut me off in the middle of this battle, and one time I just said, "Tench, up! I want nothing but silence from you." He kept jumping on my, but he went with it, you know. And
I love that.
You got to improvise and, you know, stuff like that.
Danny, you know, you do a lot of live theater, and I love live theater, and there's really nothing like a live audience there. I mean, you know, people talk about stand-up comedy, and they think, oh, you just write the set, you get up on the stage, deliver your jokes, and you're done. But really, it's a two-way street when you're doing that. And you're feeding off the vibe of the audience, and one pendejo in the audience can change the whole thing. Well, and the thing is, you can be on the stage and catch the eye of somebody and want to crack up. Has that ever happened to you?
Crack-ups, I look forward to crack-ups. Who was it? Well, Saturday Night Live, they always do crack-ups. And lately, they do it almost every show. But Carol Burnett, way back in the day, it was par for the course. If you didn't have at least a couple crack-ups per show, it wasn't a Carol Burnett show. And you loved
it. I think that was the best comedy show ever. Like, outside of the sitcom world, I think Carol Burnett is probably the best comedic actress of all time. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And Jim Conway, that guy was the master of subtlety. Sometimes he wouldn't do anything but look.
Oh, my God. Listen, I just have to tell the listeners, now that we're on the subject of Carol Burnett, I want you to get online and look up charades on YouTube and watch the Carol Burnett. It's in two part. You should do this too, Danny. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen, watching Carol Burnett in her role as Mama's Family, like in the Mama's Family thing, playing charades. You guys have to see it, but that's not what this interview is about. So let's refocus on Danny Morris. You've done comedic roles. You've done dramatic roles. How do you approach each one? Because they're both obviously, for obvious reasons, very different. But how do you approach them?
Well, very differently and very much the same. You know, you got to analyze the script. You got to catch the timing, especially with comedy. Timing is quintessential.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to look at the moments, you know, how you're going to get into that, you know, crying like a baby or laughing hysterically or whatever. And as actors, we develop different tools. When I first started, it's funny because it's in the play that I'm doing now. When I first started acting, when I had to cry,
mm-hmm.
because I was a veteran, I would remember the lyrics of the song, The Ballad of the Green Beret. And that would make
oh,
me
wow.
cry.
Really?
And then, yeah, I'm serious. That would make me cry because especially the part where it says, back at home, a young wife waits your green beret. Okay, this job, what does it require? All right, well, this is a tool I'm going to grab and I'm going to work. Okay, now I need this tool and so on and so forth.
I was on an audition on the Fox lot, and the role was this mother who had lost her son to gang members, and I had to, like, literally within, you know, because, you know, when an audition is literally 2 minutes, you're in that room 2 minutes and you're the hell out, even when they
yeah.
like you. And I literally
yeah.
had to bring tears up in 2 minutes. And I was freaking out thinking, how am I going to do this, right? Where is that going to come from in 2 minutes? Like, you
yeah.
really have to prepare. So I literally just channeled the nerves of actually literally being on that lot in that place. Like, you know, it's nerves play a role no matter what. And I took all those nerves,
yeah.
and they came out as tears, and it was great. I got a call back.
Yeah. They say, you know, use what you got. You're having
yeah.
a crappy day, use that. Channel it somehow. The guy you're reading with is an idiot, channel that somehow. Whatever
right.
it is, use it. Harness it, you know. And you will
agreed.
Get through it and might even kick some butt.
Do you think the Latino sense of humor is different from everybody else?
Well, on TV, it seems to be that way. Our sense of humor is broader, more slapsticky, you know. But there are other comedians who are very, very subtle, very deadpan. But generally, it's much broader. It's more fun.
You know, if you look at shows like Sal Gigante and that guy, Chapulín, all those old-time shows, you know, they were, and I still look at Sal Gigante more as an old-time show than a sort of cutting-edge new show. Not taking anything away from it, but, you know, it's kind of for an older generation, a more Spanish-dominant generation. But if you look at, like, what people, young, bilingual, bicultural Latinos are enjoying in terms of comedy, I don't know that it's all, like, we love Chris Rock and we love... I think we just want to hear things that are kind of for us, that sort of tap into the cultural things that we find funny, you know? Like, we
yeah.
were talking about Cubans before. That kind of stuff really makes me laugh. Like, making fun of Cubans is the best thing in the world, and I adore them. By the way, I think of myself as a Cuban, and I'm not. But, you know, like, their use of the word coño. I mean, that's the best
yeah,
word in the damn dictionary.
Word. Yeah, I don't even cuss like a Mexican anymore. I cuss like a Cuban. Every other thing I say is coño this and coño that, or the simplified ño, you know, saves time.
Of course, when you don't have enough time to say coño, the whole word, you say ño, mijo, oye, brother.
Exactly, yeah. So we're diversified that way. Yeah,
you know,
my best friend was Cuban, Manny Suarez, and he was very Cuban, very macho, and he was...
Besides get off their butt, what do they need to do and what do they need to remember? Sign us off with that thought.
The most important thing is, why do you want to do it? Because you want to be a star? Oh, okay, that's one route. But if you really love it, then you've got to be able to persevere. And the waiting on tables and the, you know, busing and this and that or whatever, it gets old real quick. So in order to maintain longevity, pick something, have a business, have an alternate career, just so you can stay in the game, because sometimes it's just a game of numbers, you know. You just got to keep plugging away. And you got to be able to plug away without desperation. Because sometimes, you know, there's a lot of actors who say, well, this is all I want to do. Yeah, but if you walk in there and you sound or feel like you haven't been able to pay your rent in 6 months, producers will smell that desperation, and it comes across in your reading. And sometimes
it's not attractive.
It's not attractive.
When people beg for the role, that's the worst way. That's the first thing you need to do to not get the role. When you go into an audition.
On Blog Talk Radio with celebrity hosts Eric Zulli, Shane Sparks, Sarah Winchester, Rick Rosman, and Mo Egger. Easy Way Broadcasting is the hottest place for music, sports, celebrity gossip, advice, and insider tips. Follow at Easy Way Broadcast. Call Easy Way Broadcasting Shows with your questions and comments at 914-338-1303.
You're listening to Jackie Vida Loca, straight from the Manalo Lisco Mortuary parking lot here in sunny Los Angeles. I'm not kidding, people. A van just drove up, and I think there's a dead person behind there. There's two vans. Either they're making a drug deal or they're dropping off dead people, and I'm watching the whole thing. Anyway, next on our show is a dear friend, Joe Falzerano, who started his career as manager of the original New York Improv and then transitioned to Carolyn's on Broadway, the most prestigious comedy venue in the U.S., where he oversaw the management of Carolyn's Comedy Club, Carolyn's Talent Management, and TV production company. He was key in introducing such hot comedy stars as Jon Stewart, Ray Romano, Dave Attell, and Dave Chappelle to the New York audiences, as well as launching the writing careers of Louis C.K., Michael Patrick King, and Mike Sweeney, all amazing comedy legends. He earned the Cable Ace Award for producing Carolyn's Comedy Hour for A&E. He also produced Comedy Central's Stand-Up and Short Attention Span Theater. He's credited with signing Greg Giraldo and developed Greg's life story into an ABC sitcom titled Common Law. Joe introduced Chef Mary Falzerano. All right.
Okay, everybody. I told you my good friend Ludovica would.
Joey F. Oh, my goodness. After all that setup, is he on the show or not?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Ah, there you are.
Yes, I've been saying hello, hello, hello.
Well, I'm getting deaf in my old age.
Well, I want to hear more about the van that pulled up with the dead bodies in the back or whatever that was all about.
He pulled out a gurney. I'm sitting in the back of a parking lot here behind the mortuary. I didn't want to be too conspicuous, but then of course that's where they all drive up to. And I don't know, Joe, whether they're doing a drug deal or whether they're dropping off dead people, but they keep looking at me.
I'd like to think they might be some of your listeners, and you're doing what all good comedians do. You're killing your audience if there's a gurney there.
Well, you know what? I got the best audience in the world right now because they're not giving me any flack. Welcome to my crazy life, Joey F. But enough about me.
I love it. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're amazing. I so enjoyed working together with you. You helped me so much. You may not realize this, but you really taught me some critical things that I continue to tap into, and I appreciate that. And I was just getting into stand-up when I first met you. I want you to tell our audience, how does Joe Public from Podunk, Indiana, find the cojones to get into stand-up comedy and do it? What does it take? How do you get into it?
The simple answer is the same way I kind of, you know, respond to anybody who takes any of my stand-up classes. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter who you are. No, you know, kick-ass stand-up comedian that I know has been anointed by God with the almighty funny bone. There's no scientist that has unearthed the comedy gene to craft something that is going to really, make audiences respond. And, you know, to me, it's no different than saying, you know, how do you paint a masterpiece? How do you create, you know, the perfect recipe? How do you, you know, write a hit song? It is trial and error and a lot of discipline and dedication to a craft that isn't easy, and what you have to gamble, it's natural. The fear of public speaking it's a frightening thing, and everybody gets nervous in front of people. Whether they tell you that or not, I think it's BS if they tell you they don't. Preparation, as you said, is the key to doing well if you're going to take the stage as a comedian. But also know that the best comedians I know, I mean, there's so many of them that still get nervous to this day. Mitch Hedberg wore his shaded glasses because he felt that that helped him deal with his nerves, because it was a barrier between him and the audience. It just created a little bit of a comfort zone for him because he had stage fright, and that just hiding behind the shades was enough of a security blanket to make them feel comfortable to get on stage. There are comedians I know that shuffle their feet and pace and you know, have all sorts of rituals they do before they go on stage because they still get nervous, and those nerves are there because you have the will to risk and you want to do well. You know, the more times you get up there and do it, the more comfortable you're going to get. But do those nerves ever go away completely? Absolutely not. And I think that's a good thing.
No, and I agree with you. I think you can use those nerves to fuel a performance. You've given a lot of advice and information on our show today, and I really appreciate it. And I'd like our readers, here we are. What planet am I living on? I'd like our listeners. That's my crazy life, okay? I'd like our listeners.
Living out in the planet of people that are getting, you know, wheeled around in gurneys and,
yeah, I'm getting the hell out
bands.
Of here in just a few minutes. Honestly, I think this is not a mortuary after all. I think they're handing out burgers in the back. I think they're smoking pot in there.
They're handing
out,
wait, they're handing out burgers?
Dead people burgers. That's what they are, Joe. it's like Chicken Run. They bring them in the front and they serve them out the back. It's gross. Listen.
All right, well, you stay safe.
Tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to train with you and do business with you.
Well, I've got a website called LAStandups.com, and they can find out a whole bunch of information about me and the classes that I teach in Los Angeles. Also do a lot of private sessions online via Skype and the phone. So it doesn't matter where you are in the country. I can help you if you're looking for ways to write, you know, funny stuff. For whatever it be, whether you want to be a stand-up or a better, speaker at corporate events, or just a better storyteller, or just handle meetings better, whatever it might be. So LAStandups.com is the best place to find me.
All right, fantastic. Okay, well, up next we have an incredible interview with Ludovica. She is a stand-up comedian. She's doing exactly what Joey has been talking about. So, EG, run that interview. Run the one we did last night. Okay, everybody, I told you my good friend Ludovica would be on the line with us today, and here she is. She's a legend in the comedy world. Listen, this woman is an irreverent, talented, hilarious, let me tell you, outspoken, dynamic, outrageously funny, super sexy Latina, okay? She started her career as a dancer when she was 15 on one of Puerto Rico's most recognizable TV shows, Noche de Gala, and before long, she was the star of the renowned Viva Caribbean show. Later, dancing along with Latin American biggest stars, the biggest stars in the world, Julio Iglesias, Iris Chacon, and a few others. She can tell us all about it. But with this amazing early success, Ludo moved to Las Vegas and worked as a dancer in some of the most prestigious. She has done TV. Listen, I'm running out of breath here. She's done TV appearances on such big shows like American Heiress, Crossing Jordan, Hot Properties, Table for Three, The Allison Anders Project, ER, Viva Vegas, Solo in America, The Steve Harvey Show, Diagnosis Murder. Listen, there's not a show this woman has not been on, and she's going to tell us more about it. We were in a Univision pilot, Locos y Revueltos, together, and Ludo then, she was kind enough to put me in her show, Ludo's Comedy Burlesque. So welcome to the Jackie's Vida Loca Show, the consummate loca of all time, Ludovica, how are you, my love?
I am fabulous, and I am so impressed that you can remember all of this, baby.
This is radio, girlfriend. I don't remember any of it. It's all written down. It's all in front of me. It sounds like I was just saying it off the top of my head.
It sounded so fabulous. It was like you were just like...
So are you Boricua or what?
Bueno, I'm half and half, baby, half and half, because, como se dice, born in La República Dominicana, you know, and then raised in Puerto Rico, you know, it's like, I think I have a mitad y mitad,
no,
you know?
No, we're not going to give you to the Dominicans, and since there's no other Dominican here to claim you, we're going to take you to the Puerto Rican side, sorry.
To the Puerto Rican side, okay.
Listen, let me ask you something, because I know we worked together, but we never...
I was talking, and then later on, you know, I was doing some very physical stuff on the dancing world, and I crack my sternum. Don't hurt. It did hurt, but it certainly hurt. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? I want to stay in show business, blah, blah. And I went, wait a minute. I always wanted to talk, and I always wanted to do funny dance numbers. I was like, I'll take a comedy class, you know, and I'll do this funny dance number thing. And then for the graduation of the comedy class, I had to go on stage and speak. I was like, oh.
Because, you know, we've all had those moments where we just literally want to dig a hole for ourselves on the actual stage and do, you know, jump right in and hope that nobody ever sees us again. What is the
we go through all of that. The comedy world and every comedian, every single comedian in this world can tell you they has those many times, okay? Mm-hmm. Believe me, it is inevitable is what it is, you know?
It is,
because,
and it's part of the learning process.
Yeah. Even I have seen people, they already know what they're doing, and they have those days and those nights, you know. I have worked with a lot of famous people, and believe me, they have had those bad days too and those bad sets.
And you know, sometimes it's not even like you did something different. It's just that the vibe is different, the audience that night is different, you're getting, because I've always said stand-up comedy is a two-way street. It's not just going up there and telling jokes. It's this, there's this relationship with the audience. Can you share with the group, with the listeners, tell me about one experience that was a real learning experience for you, one of those horrifying moments that you feel like you don't have an ounce of clothing on stage. What did you do?
Oh, my God. First of all, it was at the Comedy Store in the main room. I remember, you know, my husband is a comedian also, and we were both doing a set, and I have to go on stage and do my set freely, taking your clothes off, you know.
Right.
And
right.
It was no way that I went back into that showroom to get that tape recorded. He had to go himself and get it for me. I was almost crying. I was like, God,
well, and it is. I don't think people may realize, but that little recorder, the first thing that I was told, because when I decided, okay, I'm going to go into a smoky bar with three people, and I'm going to go and tell jokes. That's my goal in life, right? And the first thing, I took lessons from a guy who's actually going to be on our show today, Joe Falzarano. He's amazing, and he's one of the greatest. And he's an instructor who did private lessons with me. And the first thing he told me to do was get that little recorder. And I don't think people realize how that becomes like a security blanket. All you're right, all your jokes are on there.
Yeah.
All your crap is on there, you know. Messing up is on there. So, you know, it is a lifeline.
Yeah, and a joke before it becomes a joke is in there. So it's like your premise, and it's like your idea, you know. And it is so bad and jokes into smart jokes, you know.
And how do you do that? Like, what is the process? Because I know how tough that is, and you have to work it over and over and try it in front of an audience, and sometimes you get a laugh and sometimes you don't. But then there are those jokes that every single time they kill. And, you know, how does he get there?
It's a gift.
Hey, do you want to do a wife spot? We can do a husband swap, and you can loan me your husband for 1 week just so he can write my material. Lee is very good at many, many things. I can loan him out.
I'm telling you, he is so good, man. He is so good. It is unbelievable, you know. And, you know, it's funny because we have gotten into fights also because – he is American, of course, and you know, he writes jokes, and there's this American words that I don't get it. I don't get a grasp on it. And when I deliver the joke, it doesn't come out the same way.
Right.
Because of the intonation of the words and, you know. And he goes, oh, you never follows what I say, and if you would have done it the way I said it, it would have worked. And I'm like, but I'm trying.
You know, and that's an interesting dynamic because, look, when I write my material, I get so much fodder for my comedy that comes from my upbringing, the fact that I was raised in a totally Latino and typically New York Jewish household. So those two cultures kind of came together, clashed at times, and created for a lot of funny stories, which I now write into my material. So that's my inspiration.
Yeah.
What is your inspiration, and how does your husband sort of, you know, swallow that and come out with jokes that work for you.
Let me put it to you this way. Like, for example, okay, one time he was working in Seattle, I think it was, and he was getting a radio interview. He was they were interviewing him, and it was like, I think it was like around 6 in the morning or something, you know. And before he left for Seattle, I had a flat tire in the car. Mm-hmm. So he fixed it for me, you know. So he calls, he is in the radio interview, and they're asking him about me, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they started joking, and he said, well, let me call her, you know. So he calls me on the phone. He wakes me up, and he goes, how is the tire? And I said, yeah, I'm really tired. And he goes, and he goes, no, is the tire still leaking? And I went, yeah, baby, I'm really tired.
And I think she's back. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back. Yeah. So anyway, so a lot of things come out of the real life, you know?
By all means, and I think the husband and wife dynamic is also great. You know, my husband does not allow me to use any material from the shit that happens in our household, and I shouldn't have just said that S word, but I did. Anyway, he doesn't let me, like, he gets really, really uncomfortable. There is so much stuff that happens that I can't even talk about.
Well, you know, I had to edit a lot of stuff, believe me, you know, and you know. Yeah, but I don't know. I think everything, the real life is what I have learned that works the best, especially when we exaggerate it a little bit, you know. And, yeah, you have to exaggerate it, you know, to make it, you know, out there, you know. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, comedy is an exaggeration of real life. And I think the reason why people relate to comedy is because, you know, because it's related to real, actually factual events, but it wouldn't necessarily be funny if we just recounted it like it would be called a documentary, not a stand-up comedy routine.
Exactly.
You know, so,
exactly.
But anyway, let me see. The most important thing I want to know is, now that you've accomplished so much in your career with the comedy and the acting, what is your dream assignment? Where are you going next?
Well, to me, it will be having a steady part on a TV show. It could be comedic or it could be dramatic, because I love dramatic roles also. And it doesn't really have to be my own show, like, you know what I mean? A lot of people think, oh, I have to have my own show, and I got to be the Ludovica show, I love Ludo, whatever, like before, you know. Fox was trying to give me, you know, a TV show. I love Ludo, mm-hmm. you know. Now it's like, I don't think I even want that much responsibility. I just want to have that steady job, not a fake job, because...
As opposed to people who are dramatic actors to switch to comedy. I think it's much more difficult to do that. But if you were to be in a dramatic role and you were the villain, what kind of role would that be? Tell me about this woman. What would her name be? What would you wear? What would you do? How evil would you be?
You are so funny. You are so funny. By the way, I am so proud of you. I am so proud of you. You're so good at this, baby.
Oh, I love doing this.
Oh, my mansion. Okay. And also, I think it will be the woman that is married to this guy that she just can't wait for him to die so she can take the, ¿cómo se dice? La herencia.
His inheritance. You know what? I think you just described your alter ego, your evil twin. Well, I hope you get that dream project, Ludo, and I'm so appreciative of you taking the time with me to sit here on Jackie's Vida Loca, my little radio show. I hope and wish the very best for you always, and I hope you...
Podcasting is the hottest place for music, sports, celebrity gossip, advice, and insider tips. Follow at Easy Way Broadcast. Call Easy Way Broadcasting Shows with your questions and comments at 914-338-1303.
So this is Jackie from Jackie's Vida Loca, sitting in a parking lot of a mortuary. The two guys that I told you about in the van came to the car and offered me a job. Of course, I'm terrified of dead bodies, so I told them I wanted nothing to do with it. But what they don't realize is I really have to go to the bathroom, and now I don't even want to go near this place.
But I might actually have to go in there and use the ladies' room. Wish me luck. But you know what? Yeah, I don't know if you realize this, but our show is going a little bit over, and my producers just told me we have another 30 minutes. So, yay! Because you know what? We have a couple of people that are on the line. They want to talk to us. So, welcome to Jackie's Vida Loca. Who do we have on the phone with us?
Hi, cousin.
Hey, David. Oh, my God, it's you. Hey, you all met my cousin David Garcia in our during our first show, and here he is to support us again. How are you doing, my lovely boy?
I'm doing great. I can't stay very much long, too long on the phone. Josh's birthday's today. He's 22. Could you believe that?
Wow, Josh. He's such a good-looking kid, and he's such a sweet boy. He was in my wedding. Well, actually, no, it was Jesse was in my wedding, his brother. But,
no, they were both.
Oh.
I think they were both.
Maybe they were both. That was a while ago. I can't believe how long I've been married, David. It's like in marriage years, I think I've been married 130 years, but I'm just kidding around because I'm married to a really great guy. So, but I can never remember my anniversary, and I can never remember exactly how long I've been married. It's a terrible, terrible thing. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Calling to support you, and I got a quick little story today. I got today I got stuck with the guilt and the smell. I happened to go to a store, and I was standing next to a gentleman who was who I guess needed to pass gas, but didn't tell anybody, and I was stuck there. I asked for assistance, and he left.
He didn't tell anybody. What do you alert people before you pass before you fart?
Wait a second.
Hello,
wait a second.
Everybody.
There's always
stand back. I got
there's
a big one
there's
coming.
A giveaway. There's a giveaway. There's a definite giveaway. There's always
I think people get a certain look on their face. Yeah, right before.
Absolutely.
And you know the worst protagonists about passing gas without letting anything on are people on planes. They never say a word, and you never know exactly who did it. You never know who did it.
Oh, well, you always tell because they're the ones laughing, you know, in the background going, you get to smell it.
They're the ones who are acting like nothing happened. But here's the thing. Sorry to interrupt your story. So you're at the store. You're standing behind a guy. He's bracing himself to let out a stinky. And what happens?
I had already called the gentleman to come and help me. So this guy, you know, the culprit left.
Uh-huh.
And the guy.
I would have done exactly what that guy did. I wouldn't put it past you.
Hey, listen, I've been the kind of guy that had the whole family in the car, and secretly I push the window lock button and let one out and watch on all the mirrors to see the, you know, everybody's face. And I love to see them just trying to get the window down, and they can't. And they're gasping for air, turning blue, you know, asking, pleading, please, Dad, please just let us put the window down. And
I think that's
I
domestic
won't.
Abuse. I think that she, you know what, somebody should have called 911.
Well,
nobody should have
only
to put up with that in their household, that kind of abuse.
Oh, come on now. Really? We're going to go down this route?
All right, let me ask you, David, because I know you've told me before, and I have a feeling that's why you were listening today, but you've told me before you wanted to get into stand-up. Have you been listening to the show today?
Oh, I have, absolutely.
So what's the
absolutely.
One thing, like, of all the things that all these people who are currently doing it, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, what is the one thing that you took away from this?
You have to really love what you want to do. It's not something that you have to, I mean, the one thing for me, I mean, as far as what I've heard today, and it rang very true for me, is I love to make people laugh. It's not about, people telling other people, oh, this guy's is, you know, really funny and, you know, building myself up. I
people out there that are scared to go for it, and what is it that you guys need to get over to go for the dream?
Personally, for me, it's more of a logistics kind of thing. I mean, where I'm at right now, it's not conducive to, like, building a career as a stand-up comic. And it's not because of anything else, but, you know, the demographics here are a little bit different.
If it's doing a set in your kitchen to your kids, go to that party tonight. Go to Josh's birthday party and tell one joke use the advice you found, you know, on my show today, and just try it. Do one little thing every day. That was what I decided when I moved to L.A. But listen, David, listen, I want to thank you for calling in today and for supporting this show and supporting us online and on Facebook and all the way around. I really appreciate it, and we want to hear you. We want to hear from you over and over again, so stay tuned next Media Mogul. And I want to thank him because last week I was supposed to do this whole show on Latino beauty, and I had so many juicy tidbits to tell you about which don't make sense for today, but we'll definitely get to them. But I want to thank him because he totally stepped in and helped me out because I actually auditioned, booked, and shot a Toyota commercial, a national Toyota commercial, last week. And it was the most fun I've had in a really long time. I played with some really crazy people. And if you want to see pictures of that, go to Jackie's Vida Loca on Facebook. And I want to encourage you guys to follow me on Twitter as well, at Jackie's Vida Loca. And if you have any ideas for the show or there's something you want to talk about that you don't want to put your bare butt on the online radio, but you do want to communicate with me, I accept all my emails directly and personally, so I will be able to answer you directly and personally as well, but we'll do it in a private setting. But you can email me at jackiesvidaloca@gmail.com. And, you know, I just want to thank all of the listeners of this show and the people who started supporting us early on. This is only show 3, the one negative about a Latino to any one of us. But when you talk to us, the Cubans make fun of the Puerto Ricans. The Puerto Ricans make fun of the Mexicans. Well, the Cubans make fun of everybody. We all of us Latinos, make fun of the Argentinians, and they know why. But because I'm Puerto Rican, I can make fun of the Puerto Ricans, right? So let me tell you, you know you're Puerto Rican if you ever use your lips to point something out. You've ever been hit with chancletas, la correa, or the cord of a plancha. Chancletas are house slippers, la correa is a belt, or the cord of your iron. You get really scared when someone mentions el coco. You've gone to Titi's house and passed through the bead curtain in the living room. Your mother has a porcelain cat, dog, Buddha, or elephant in her living room. And in my case, I actually bought my mother her porcelain cat. Almost everyone you know is nicknamed Mira. You have a perpetually drunk neighbor. And someone you know has a rug or sofa covered in plastic. Ha, 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 Puerto Ricans, I know you're listening. All my little cousins are out there. That came from loljokes.com by Ricardo Montalban Theater. And one of the things we're trying to do is get broadcast as a part of it. So hopefully it will even end up on the air. And so that's something I'm going to be talking about as we move forward. And the other thing is getting ready for pilot season and, you know, nurturing relationships with casting directors. And my beautiful, wonderful, wonderful agent, Tina Truman, who has been a tremendous source of love and support. And honestly, I can't even think of a different kind of person that I would want helping to sort of manage my career and figure out what we do next and really pitching me out there to people who may never have heard of me before, which is a lot of people. And I'm very grateful, and I'm even more grateful because she introduced Eric and I, and now we're doing the show together. So I'm going to sign out. I got to leave the mortuary and go find a public bathroom somewhere. Welcome to my crazy life. I'll have so much more to tell you next week, but this is it from LA today. Have a fantastic week, everyone. Eric, run the outro, please.
Adios, everybody. Join me again next Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, for the craziest Latino mommy on Jackie's Vida Loca.